Hello again, everybody. Welcome to another exciting edition of the Big Red Bus as we pull it in reverse, pull it out of the driveway. The Big Red Bus has got busted tires, busted windows, but we're still roaring along as we near the end of our destination, the end of the season. Only a scant, 24 or so games away. And my co-rider here is the great one, Doug Tonis. Doug, how you doing, brother?
Doing great today. Doing great.
Awesome, man. Awesome. Well, lots to talk about. Where do we begin? Let's first start out with, I don't know if you had a chance to watch over the weekend, the skills competition with our beloved Lauri Markkanen and Dunn's performance on Friday. And then obviously Zach LaVine, too, a pretty big presence there on the actual telecast for the slam dunk contest. The Bulls were well represented on Friday and Saturday. Obviously no one in the game on Sunday. I'd like to get your impressions over the weekend, if there was anything that kind of stuck with you. For me, I'd like to start out just by saying how LaVine is really kind of like slam dunk royalty. It was kind of amazing to me to hear everybody talk about him with such reverence. And I guess it was something I didn't look at as closely as I probably should have in the past. I just never really had an interest when any Bulls weren't really playing. And I know, you know, he did some great things in those contests with Gordon, against Gordon, but it really struck me, man, this kid is really treated with a reverence that is kind of unique, I think. So it's kind of exciting to see the Bulls well represented at least Friday and Saturday.
Yeah, I can't say I have much to add, as I did not watch any of the All-Star activities this weekend, so I've got little to say. It's nice that they had a presence in some of the minor games, but, you know, who really cares about the skills competition? And I don't know. It's great. I guess if Lowry was there, it's better than not being there. But it's sort of like playing the rookie sophomore game. Like, what does it really get you? You know, it's like if you're not a bust, you play in those games, so... I can't say I'm overly excited about it. I'll be more excited when we have people playing again on the Sunday activities.
Yeah, agreed. I would counter that I think a lot of these relationships are developed at games like this. And I do think that Markkanen's profile was definitely raised nationally, which I think is always a good thing. I think the more people know about how good some of these young kids are, the better. And he really performed well in the skills competition. He took second place. Believe it or not, lost to Spencer Dinwiddie. But, you know, he did beat Embiid in round two, performed very well, and just showed off how amazing this kid's skill set is for a 20-year-old center or slash power forward. Really incredible stuff. So, yeah, I kind of
excited about Spencer Dinwiddie now.
That was another counter.
I mean, he's the next coming. I mean, that's what I mean, though. I mean, it's like he lost to Spencer Dinwiddie. It's sort of like, you know, when Lonnie Baxter was back-to-back MVPs in summer league, and he was like the first guy to do that. Like, well, great for Lonnie Baxter. He went on to do like nothing. So,
holy cow!
You know, it's fine. It's nice that he was there. It's nice that he finished second, but it doesn't mean anything. I don't think he developed anything here that's notable. I guess it fills time on a podcast where there's like one game since the last show, and that's kind of about it.
All right. Well, if you want to be Debbie Downer about it, that's fine.
I'm going to get kicked off the bus, I think, is about what's going to happen here.
All right. Yeah. Well, let's go on to the next topic, which I do want to talk about, is you've done a little research since the last Big Red Bus regarding our cap situation, which I think is kind of extremely interesting and very important because there is quite a big debate. You know, everybody likes to sack on the front office for not picking up a second round draft pick in exchange for, you know, an incredibly onerous contract that we'll have on our hands until 2020. What is the cap situation for the beloved Bull, and how is it going to be affected by LaVine's negotiations next year?
So 2018 LaVine's cap hold doesn't mean a whole heck of a lot, right? Because his cap hold is around like $9 million, and so that's like pretty manageable this coming off season. But in 2019, he'll actually be on his first year salary for whatever the Bulls end up paying him. Now, I think we discussed last show, the most he could make if he takes the qualifying offer and then gets a four-year max contract after that is around $22 million a year. So the Bulls shouldn't be bidding more than that. If you put Zach LaVine at $22 million a year and then you don't find ways to get rid of Denzel Valentine and some other players, the Bulls aren't going to have full max cap room, most likely. Now, they'll very easily be able to obtain max cap room by, say, renouncing Bobby Portis, moving Denzel Valentine, maybe taking, you know, one or two of these first-round picks they're going to get over the next two drafts and moving those guys I mean, it's very easy to move those things around and get cast. So effectively, if Kawhi Leonard is here and says, I want to be a Bull, or Klay Thompson is out there and says, I want to be a Bull, the Bulls will be able to generate the max offer. And by max, I'm talking about the high 35% of the salary cap max, not the, you know, the low Zach LaVine end max, which is around $25 million right now. So,
what year are we saying, Doug? Really quick, so you're saying 2019-20, that year is the year they'll be able to offer one max slot?
Yeah, 2019, we will be able to offer a max slot.
Okay.
2020, probably not. I mean, it depends on what we do. It's far enough out that clearly right now we don't have enough money guaranteed. But you're going to start seeing other guys coming up for extensions. You'll have to figure out if you're going to keep Bobby Portis by that point. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to think. Chris Dunn, I believe, will be a restricted free agent that year. So, you know, you're going to have some decisions to make. And you'll probably have used your cap space over 2018 and 19. So I don't think that you're going to really have a cap play in 2020. I think it's probably 2019. And I think that's pretty exciting, actually. If the Bulls do well, if they get a really good player in this draft, which since our last cast now we'll have to have a draft update, doesn't look quite as exciting. But mm-hmm. if they are able to get a really good player in this draft and they have a good season next year, well, you and I think both believe they'll make the playoffs. You'll be a playoff team with 7 to 8 guys who are under 25 on it and who have a lot of room for internal growth. And if you're Kawhi Leonard and the Spurs don't really look like they have talent around him coming up, then that looks pretty intriguing. And if you're Klay Thompson and the Golden State Warriors decide we don't really want to pay $150 million a year for Klay Thompson, which is probably about what it'll be to keep him because they'll be so deep into luxury tax. And, you know, I know they want to keep the core together, but really, like, you could win without Klay Thompson, can't you? If you have Kevin Durant and Stephen Curry and Draymond Green, I mean, at yes. some point you might say I'd rather have $150 million and like a 25% chance less of winning a title. So if he's out there, that's also, you get one of those two guys and you fill them with the other guys we have, that team looks awfully dangerous. I mean, it really does. And I think there's a fair chance that'll happen because I don't know who the other competitors are going to be for all this cap room. Like, it's not like there's all these other great teams. I think maybe Philadelphia will be a team, depending on what they do with their contracts, that could really be exciting in the mix also for one of these young stars. But there's not going to be a lot of better destinations out there.
That's great to hear. That's great to hear. And I'm kind of in agreement with you, you know, for this upcoming offseason. I'm not really excited about the list out there that I think we realistically have an opportunity to get. You know, I the only guy, Paul George, I mean, if Paul George expressed interest that I want to come to Chicago, obviously that'd be a nice fit, I think, for this team potentially for this year. But I think you're right. 2019 is probably the better option. And I think after we prove we're going to be a playoff team next year, that's probably the way to go. Is there any potential problems that you kind of foresee? Have you looked at all at the other teams in the NBA? It seems like to me, there's so many albatross contracts out there that it seems like there's a ton of teams just in horrific cap hell for years to come. And I don't see a lot of those teams getting out of it. That's question one. And question two, and maybe we should start with this one. Now that you've really analyzed this cap situation, does that change your opinion on bringing in a player, an albatross contract for an asset, especially if that asset is something as insignificant as a second rounder or maybe even a late first rounder?
Well, I think if you could do that this year, and you could have done it at the trade deadline to bring in a deal that runs through the end of this year and then next year, so you're basically taking 1 year, but you still have that 2019 space, mm-hmm. and I think that would have been a good deal because I think looking at this year, you want to punt on this year's free agency. And so if you're going to kick it to 2019, then you might as well use that space somehow. Now, a lot of these deals will come up at the time of the draft when teams are looking to do a lot of trading. Sometimes there's more trades there. So I don't think it's a big deal that they didn't pull the trigger on it necessarily at the time of the trade deadline. I think they'll have another opportunity to maybe be involved as an intermediary at draft time. So I do hope that they're able to get a one-year kind of filler contract and take on an asset, but I don't think it's that big a deal either way. And you're certainly not going to get a great asset the way things are going. You're going to have to repeat now my memory the size of a gnat. I forgot the other half of your question, something about
the other teams. And did you look at all some of the other teams that are in? I think the vast majority of them are in much more detrimental cap situations or unfortunate cap situations.
Kind of true and kind of not true. I mean, the thing is, there was really big signings, like a year back, 2 years back, you start seeing all these big signings. But the max length of deals now is 4 years. So you're never so far gone anymore. You know, and I think you see teams, even if they signed and use all the cap space, then, you know, the teams who signed busts, those busts are rolling off the books. You know, there's teams like Washington that maybe have good players they want to keep, and those good players are taking all their cap room, and they're in a tough spot for that reason. Mm-hmm. I think Boston will be in the same boat. I don't think there's a lot of good teams that are going to have a lot of cap room, but I think there'll be plenty of teams that have cap room. The cap room is just flowing faster than it used to. As they've shortened the length of contracts, you know, there's just going to be more and more teams of cap space every year. And so I think there'll be a number of competitors in 2019, but you're not going to see something like the Golden State Warriors out there, where you have a great team that also has a lot of cap space, unless maybe it's the Philadelphia 76ers. If Embiid and Ben Simmons, you know, really take off next year, which is definitely a possibility. If Fultz ever gives them something, you know, they could be a team that does that. And maybe if the Bulls really have a lot of development over the next year, they could be a team that does that. But there's not going to be a whole lot of teams that look like they'll be, you know, playoff teams with a lot of cap room.
I think you're right, though, about 2019-20. The prize free agent, as I look through the list, is Klay Thompson. Everyone else, I mean, I'm sure I'm missing a few, but that would be a guy that you would love to see, you know, just come on in. I understand he's probably playing the same position as LaVine, but you can figure it out when you bring in some kind of talent like that.
Kawhi Leonard, I think, has got to be on your list of pretty amazing players who will be available then as well.
Yep. And then Karl Anthony Towns will be a restricted free agent. Very interesting.
That's worthless. I mean, come on.
Well,
restricted free agents don't move.
Well, hold on one second. I will say this. Jimmy Butler is going to be a free agent before that, and you're going to have to pay him a whole ton of money. You've already promised a max deal, you know, for Wiggins. It'll be very interesting to see if you could somehow create a – well, I mean, it would require a max deal, and see Minnesota try to match that or match that would really put them if you could be creative here. But you're right. You're probably right. They're probably not going to get him.
Speaking of Jimmy Butler, also a free agent 2019, would you bring Jimmy Butler back on a Supermax deal?
Oh, absolutely not. No way. I mean, just as I don't – I think the last 3 years of Jimmy's contract are going to be pretty awful. And, you know, I think he's a very complex character because he's got so many good parts of him that, you know, as far as being – I saw a video of him playing with somebody, a girl in the crowd at the All-Star game. But that said, I think he's an incredibly selfish player. The last two games I watched, the Timberwolves, I think he's – the way they're utilizing Towns is absolutely appalling to me. He's never in the post. He's one of the best post players in the NBA. It's about Jimmy. Jimmy is going to be the ball-dominant guy, and I don't think he works well with others. And I don't think it would work well with this young core at all. So the answer would be absolutely not, absolutely no, and I don't think the Bulls would ever consider that either. What about you?
Yeah, maybe. I would take him back. I mean, I wouldn't be excited about it. I would take Kawhi Leonard and Klay Thompson first because of a bunch of various reasons. But sure, if you're sitting there and you're debating between Jimmy Butler at a max deal or signing, like, random guys to, like, $20 million deals, I'll take Jimmy Butler.
Do you have any hesitancy?
Sure, yeah. I think the contract, like you said, it could easily go against you in a really huge way. Easily. But if you can add a guy who's, you know, top 15 player, if he's still playing at that level, you can add a top 15 player to this core. Maybe you got maybe three guys who, you know, could potentially be, say, top 40 players.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's something you do. That's really like the Golden State model. You got, like, you know, four guys who are elite players. You know, or could become elite players. You know, I think that's, you have to take a chance on that.
Where would you put Jimmy, ranking-wise, in the NBA right now?
It's so hard to like, figure that out, but I think he's somewhere, but for me, probably, you know, between, like, 8 and 12.
Yeah, I got him between 10 and 15. I know I've done this exercise many, many times, and you know, he's definitely there. But Kendall Gill, I heard again this past week on their Bulls Talk podcast, make the point, you know, last year when they were up 2-0, if you're that guy, if you're one of the elite, you got to be able to win one out of the next, you know, several games. You might not want to be able to win the series, but you have to do something that will get your team one win after Rondo's injury. I just don't think he's that guy. I think he's more of a complimentary guy who thinks he's the alpha. You know, he thinks he's Batman and he's the best at Robin. That's how I view Jimmy Butler, and I always have.
I don't know. I mean, the Celtics were a much better team than the Bulls. And after Rondo went out, like, their point guard situation was crap. I don't know. It's fine as an argument, but I don't buy that, really. And you look at how much the Timberwolves have improved with Butler this year, and, you know, I think he's definitely still very legit. And we're not talking about top five. You know, if we're talking about top five, I'd say yes. You should be called upon to win a series. But, like, if you're talking, like, you know, 8 to 12, or in your case, 10 to 15, I mean, that's like a guy who's, like, the average best player on an average team in the NBA.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like, 15th, there's 30 teams in the NBA. So the 15th player, if talent is spread out somewhat reasonably, would be the best guy on, like, a 40-win team.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, so I don't think that guy is necessarily going to, you know, do anything special against a team that's seated, you know, six spots above him, his team.
Yeah, there's no doubt he's drastically improved the Timberwolves. I mean, they were a 31-win team last year with Wiggins and Towns leading the league in minutes. Total minutes played. They're leading the league in total minutes played again, but, you know, they're obviously a much better team. That said, I watched their last two games, two of the most unimpressive wins I've ever seen from a contender over the Kings and Lakers at home, games that went down the wire. And they won.
Were they wins?
They won.
I
yeah,
think
they won.
Like, we're now going to pick on, like, how good wins are.
I
think we've gone enough on the Timberwolves.
I do just want to say,
back towards the Bulls.
I do, but it is somewhat relevant. I do want to just say really quick and ask you one quick question. Because big picture, what, you know, the trade for the Timberwolves perspective, what for? You know, they're going to be a first-round exit most likely. They're going to probably play the Thunder, and I have the Thunder beating them. And then even if they win, they're not winning anything this year. They're not winning anything next year. And someone on Twitter sent me a note, like, big picture, wouldn't the Timberwolves been better off just drafting Markkanen, going with Dunn at the one, Wiggins at the two, Markkanen at the four, Levine at the two, Wiggins at the three, Markkanen at the four, and Towns at the five? Isn't that team in 4 or 5 years significantly better than the Timberwolves is currently constituted?
Maybe, but I think that's a somewhat unfair comparison for a few reasons. One, you don't know that they would have drafted Lowry. They may have drafted someone else. You know, you don't know what their analysis was on the draft at that point. And so what they do is they take the expected route of what the number 7 pick is going to get. Now, Lowry's playing like maybe he's the best player in the draft. So you can't count on getting that type of upside at number 7. You have to count on what typically comes at number 7, which is a guy who's probably a starting caliber player. And then Chris Dunn was doing absolutely nothing for them. I mean, he was a huge bust for them. I mean, and blame Thibodeau, blame whatever, but clearly he wasn't doing anything for them. And then Levine just tore his ACL, so you have no idea how that's going to go.
Yeah.
So what the Timberwolves did is they took a whole bunch of risk and of guys that, like, they wouldn't necessarily have expectations for, and they moved him for a guy who's probably a top 10 player in the NBA. I don't think you can fault them for that. I do agree that if they had the three we got, they'd probably be better off in the long run, just because of the youth of the rest of the team. But mm-hmm. And I think we're better off in the long run for having made this trade.
No doubt.
But I think when you look at what they've done, I think as long as they can keep Butler and they can keep this group together, they're going to be a perennial playoff team. I think they could be a perennial, like, second-round type playoff team.
Yep.
And for the Timberwolves, you know, that's pretty good, right? I mean, like, they've never won a title. Yeah, I mean, if you're the Timberwolves, this is as good as your franchise has ever had it if you hit that milestone. And then you have to hope that you luck into some other move, or you get a late first that turns out to be good, or, you know, you have to hope for something else. But I think if you're a Timberwolves fan and you're able to get a team that consistently makes the playoffs and maybe advances around, you know, at least every other year and has a chance in the ECF or WCF to do something, I mean, that's as good as you can hope for if you're a Timberwolves fan right now.
Yeah, I guess you make a good point. It's just that I feel Golden State's going to have this, You know, Western Conference wrapped up for 3 or 4 or 5 years, and you know, Jimmy is getting older, and he's got a lot of mileage on the tires. I mean, to that,
that's probably true, yeah. And I agree. They're probably not going to win a title with this group, but you know, at some point, you got to take the guys you have and do the best you can.
Amen.
You know, you can't Amen. Just keep rebuilding, and it's like with the Bulls right now. Do I think the Bulls are going to probably win a title with this group of guys? Probably not. I think it's actually extremely unlikely. They clearly don't have a guy who looks like a super duper star. And I don't think any of the guys I have are going to turn into that. If you don't have that, it's very rare that you win. And so this Bulls team probably is going to peter out at like second round playoffs, maybe an ECF or two. That's probably the ceiling of this team, and they may not even get there. They might be a perennial first round exit team. But at some point, you collect enough talent, and then you have to let them grow, get as good as they can, and take their chance. And maybe some guys surprise you and become really good. You know, there's teams that have won that you would have never predicted. When Dallas beat Miami going into that season, if you said Dallas was going to win the title, everyone would have laughed their ass off at you.
If you would have said that going like into Dallas, the playoffs, they would have laughed at you.
Best collection of teams for players. So.
Nobody expected them to get by the Lakers. Nobody expected them to get by Oklahoma City, that 2012 Dallas team. So I do disagree with your assessment of the core three, but we'll get into that shortly as we get to our mailbag questions. Which will be part of this episode. And please send us your questions to ChicagoBullseye@gmail.com or on Twitter. You can follow me at C as in Chicago Bullseye Fred. Also C Red Fred. You can search there and then send me the question or over to Doug, which is Doug_Tonus, at Doug_Tonus. So first question from Master Bear Jedi. Only recently discovered this podcast. Love your insight and attitude. Thank you so much. Any chance Felucho turns it around? He seemed to be on such a high trajectory last season, but now, according to all reports, he's unplayable. What do you think happened? I'll let you start that one out.
He got paid, and then he ate.
He got fat. Exactly.
I mean, he came in, I think it was like reportedly like 30 pounds heavier, just lazy, you know, whatever. So, you know, could he turn it around? I think it was a reach that they paid him as much as they did. It seemed like the going rate based on like the previous years, like it didn't seem so bad. But then as soon as he signed, like he saw there was no money like that for anyone else. And then you're like, whoa, maybe that wasn't so good. You know, they really paid him based on the fact that he showed some potential and some flashes. They didn't pay him based on production. And now we see that these are just flashes. Kind of reminds me of Jerome James signing up the New York Knicks from way, way back when, where he had a good playoff series for Seattle, and then the Knicks paid him like, you know, $35 million, and which was basically twice as much in today's money. And, you know, then he just did nothing at all. So it was just an immediate bust. And I think that's the case with Felicio. I don't see a whole lot of redemption. I would like to see the Bulls try, though. Just give him 20 minutes tonight and see what happens. We're trying to lose anyway.
Yeah, I've never understood the infatuation or love for Felicio. Even his rookie year, I remember many fans waxing poetic about how he was better than Gasol. He should be getting Gasol's minutes, which I thought was absolute insanity. He can't hit a shot outside of the paint, outside of, you know, basically 6 feet. The heck with the paint. He's virtually no threat on the offensive end whatsoever. The only thing he had going for him is occasionally he's got that nice, you know, pick and roll where he'll dunk it. He had some nice chemistry going with Wade last year on that every once in a while, but I can't recall last time I've seen him do that this year. He's a horrible positional rebounder. I can't recall one game where he's had more than one offensive rebound. And if he gets one, it's usually by accident. I mean, I could go on and on about this guy. He's done nothing to improve. I think he's a complete and utter disaster. And I think it was a horrible move to sign him to 4 years. I understand why they did it. I think they thought, yet, like you said, Doug, that they were getting a bargain for big men, you know, for $8 million a year. But the issue is, and I realized this when I was out in L.A. and talking to someone in the know with the Clipper organization, that when they signed Lou Williams for $8 million, that should have been assigned to the league, that the next 2 years you're going to get some major players on bargain deals. That the whole thing, I mean, that same contract 2 years earlier would have been at least $16 million, at least twice of what he signed for. For a guy who's 31 and was putting up the numbers that Lou Williams was. He was almost an all-star. So that should be a signal to everyone that there's just not as much money around. And Lou and his agent, I'm sure, saw that. And going forward, these contracts are going to have a massive shrinking effect. So there would probably have been a team last year to give that money to Felicio. But I've never liked the guy. I think his short arms, he's got to bend over to zip up his pants. He's got no length. He's horrible defensively. He doesn't scare anyone. The guy's almost a lost cause, and I would do anything at all possible to get rid of him next year.
How do you really feel about Felicio? It really wasn't that clear. I mean, do you like the guy or not?
Are you serious? No, I don't.
No, I'm not serious.
Oh, good, thank God.
I can't agree with anything you said. I'm not a big fan of Felicio either. I think in retrospect, and maybe the lesson the Bulls take away from this, is if they think they're getting a great deal, there's no need to like lock that up at like midnight. Like, you could let the market develop a little bit more.
Yes. I mean, I don't know. I kind of feel like they got caught up in the nobody saw this guy. We found this guy. You know, we really pulled the Jerry Krause and finding him in the middle of nowhere. And, you know, we got to make sure we lock him up, because if he ends up being good, you know, we're really going to take heat for that. And you don't want to get in that line of thinking, you know. But I don't blame it on them either. I blame it on Felicio. I mean, what the heck did this guy do all summer? You know, you think the whole league's moving towards a league where you got to be able to hit a jumper. He doesn't even look at the basket when he's 8 feet out there. You know, he's terrible. So I don't blame him as much on the front office. I blame him a lot more on the player. And that guy needs to look in the mirror and realize that this will be his last contract unless he gets his act together. So,
well, the front office has to evaluate that. They have to evaluate the guy's work ethic. They have to evaluate his character. And clearly he didn't work over the offseason. He didn't stay in shape. I mean, even if he came back without any great skills, the skills were similar, but he was in, like, amazing shape and was, like, a hustle big man and could, you know, bring some energy or something, which I think was kind of his role in the past, you could live with that. Like, it wouldn't be great, and you think, well, we kind of overpaid this guy. We hoped he developed, and he didn't. But at least he's giving you some energy and some hustle plays. Like, no, you're not even getting that. You're not getting anything. So
no.
That play seems like a big, big bust, and maybe we should leave poor Felicio alone for the rest of the cast.
That sounds good. Well, we'll retire him for the rest of the year. I don't even want to bring him up. Bleep, bop, boop, our good old friend, brings up the question, what's up with Fred and Gar? Clearly, Gar or Pax has or should have communicated to Fred to start tanking. Fred's coaching like his job is on the line, so there appears to be a disconnect. End the quote. And a question. Why don't you start this one off, too?
I nailed it right there. I mean, it's not even a question. It's like a statement. The question is really, what the hell's going on? I agree. You know, Paxton at the trade deadline, he comes out and he says, you know, Robin Lopez and Justin Holiday are veterans. They know the state we're in. You know, they know we're going to look at, like, some young guys. And then, you know, Lopez is playing 28 minutes a game since then, and Holiday, like, 35. Like, so apparently that message was not conveyed to Fred Hoiberg. And after the first game, you'd think they would be on the phone like, hey, did you not see the presser? I mean, did we not imply this heavily enough for you? Like, do something. But, you know, that didn't happen either, because the next game, the same deal happened again. So hopefully over this week, you know, Fred and Gar and Pax have sat down and kind of said, this is what we're going to be doing the rest of the year. And we see Felicio, who I just promised not to mention, on the court a lot more, because that will get us some losses.
Yeah, maybe I'm off on the timeline here. They beat Orlando. I thought after Pax said this, they beat Orlando. They beat the Timberwolves, which I completely understand that, you know, maybe we'll waive all the minutes questions here. And then they got blown out by the by Toronto, which is the best team in the East right now. Like, I'm going to give it a week, but I concur and I agree 100%. Like, there should be a limit on all these guys. 20 minutes, 25 minutes, Markkanen, you know, everybody done. I will say, I looked up at Markkanen. He's only played 35 or more minutes five times all season. So I think he might be on somewhat of a minutes restriction. Definitely going forward from here on out, I'd say no more than 30 minutes a game for Markkanen. I'd say 25 and 25 for the other two. I do want them to play together, but I don't want them closing. It's kind of a tough call, though, because I do also see value in those three guys playing and pressure points down the you know, down the last 5 minutes of a close game. And I am a little different, I think, than most people, that I don't agree that this draft is a slam dunk at the bottom five. I'm not in that same party that most people are. So I'm not as concerned about, oh, we got to get the number one or number two pick. Sure, it's great if we can get it. And you're more likely to make the right pick there, you know, make a pick that's hopefully ideal if you don't even have that option at seven or eight, right? But But it is kind of that doesn't come. That shouldn't go to Fred. That's management's job for them to sit with him and say, "Listen, you're going to close at Felicio. He's going to be on the court. Court Payne is going to be on the court, and Zipser. Those three guys are going to be on the court, and we're going to lose a lot of games." So that's up to them.
I think you can do so. I mean, to me, I feel you don't limit Zach LaVine, Chris Dunn, and Lauri Markkanen more than, say, you know, 33 minutes a game or so. So they can put up to this much. I'd say, you know, Cameron Payne, Felicio, and Zipser, like you said, we need to take a look at these guys. They need at least 20 minutes each. And yeah. I'll throw Portis and Valentine in the guys who can play up to 33 minutes bucket.
Yeah.
But, you know, you got to get Felicio, Payne, and Zipser 20 minutes each. And I think that's enough to throw things in there and just say, look, we got a 20-minute cap on Holiday and Lopez. And only in the first and third quarters, give them the Bogans treatment. You know, don't let those guys, you know, play down the stretch.
I would like to point out a little bit of the hypocrisy of some of the people complaining about this, though. Like, they can't even do tanking right. These are the same people I've seen wax poetic about Tom Thibodeau. And last year in the race for 31 wins, in his last 25 games, Towns played 35 or more minutes, 21 out of 25 games, when they were going for 31
wins. Towns is a developing player. Of course he should be playing.
Well, wouldn't you make the same argument? Hold on a second.
Your guys who are developing.
Wouldn't you make the same argument about Markkanen?
That's fine. If they played Lowry 35 minutes a game, I wouldn't care.
You would what? You would complain?
I would not care. I'd be fine. No, it's fine.
I think that'd be insane, Doug. I'm just saying, if we're going for a tank, if we want to get the best possible draft position, there's no benefit of playing Lowry Markkanen in 35 more minutes, Zach or Doug.
But you're not going for just pure. You're at some point you're developing your guys too. You have to have some benefit of developing your guys. So what you're doing when you're tanking is you're going to pull the guys like Lopez and Holiday, who you don't care what they do for you in the future. And you replace them with guys like Payne and Zipser and Felicio, who just are god-awful train wrecks. And then it really doesn't matter what the other guys do for you because they're not going to win. You know, you can't win 3-on-5.
Yeah.
You know, you throw Payne out there as your point guard and Felicio out there as your center, and whoever's left is not going to generate wins for you. I mean, it's just, you're going to be fine. So I don't think you limit the minutes of your guys who are still developing and young players that need to improve. Chris Dunn still needs a lot of time to improve. So does Lowry. So I think you can get those guys their minutes, and I don't think it'll hurt.
I do.
Certainly, I'm not upset about it compared to Lopez or Holiday. Like, those last two wins, if you played Lopez just 15 minutes and you put in Felicio, you lose both those games.
Yes, agreed. I do disagree, though. I think if you played a big three significant minutes, 35 or more, I think we're going to win far too many games. I think those guys have already proven that they're good enough to win consistently, especially against under 500 teams. I think I saw some, the vast majority of games that we have left are against under 500 teams. The schedule's pretty easy going forward. So I do feel you got to limit those guys if we want to really, quote unquote, tank. But it is a balance, like you said. I mean, you still want them to get some valuable minutes near the end of games to help them grow and develop. It's a really tough call. But big picture here for our future, I'd like to see a limit between 20 and 30 minutes for all three of them.
I don't think that's going to happen. So I think you'll be disappointed. We'll leave it at that.
Okay, we'll see. Fred and Doug, what is your opinion if we get the number one pick, who would you want to take? And what is your general opinion of the draft? So this is what I referred to earlier of this draft, which, as an aside, you know, most people have said it's one of the best in the last 20 years. I think I heard something similar last year. Occasionally you hear that, and it's wrong. But I think most people would say this is a pretty strong draft from five below. Who would you take if you had number one overall pick, Doug?
Well, you know, I haven't done a whole lot of draft research yet. I think it's hard to really scout the whole, you know, college player base until you're after the tournament and you get to see everyone play and kind of review how their seasons went, and everyone starts going into the heavy conference schedule and conference tournaments and stuff like that, where you get to see guys play under more pressure and such. So it's hard for me to say who I would take number one. I mean, I'd maybe just go with Ayton just because everyone else says Ayton. But I'm not, like, I've watched any of these guys some huge amount of time. I'm just hoping I can watch every Bulls game, which I've done since I came back at my Bulls beat. I've watched every Bulls game since then. But I don't have enough time to then throw, like, 100 college games on top of that to really give a great opinion. I will trust the pundits. If everyone says this is a really great draft, then it's probably a great draft. I mean, people do know this ahead of time. Most of the time, they're able to predict whether a draft is good or not good. So when they say this is going to be one of the better ones, it probably is. Does that mean you're going to get three guys like Michael Jordan in the draft? No, it does not. But it means probably there's going to be, you know, future all-star players in the top 10 picks.
I have serious reservations now about what most people, the consensus is about this draft. There isn't a player I've seen that I would put anywhere near or close to guys like I saw in the past, like LeBron, you know, guys who were clearly, you know, number one overall, even Simmons.
Okay, guys like LeBron, like there's like two guys like LeBron drafted like in the past,
right.
Like
well, maybe,
years. I mean, come on, let's lower the bar a little bit here.
All right, let's say Simmons. Let's say Ben Simmons. He was like, everybody's like, Ben Simmons is the, and for the most part, almost everybody agreed that was a consensus number one. There is no consensus number one, I don't think, right now. I think most people would probably say Ayton, but a lot of people would Luka Doncic. I have major problems, though, with both guys. I consider major. You know, Ayton has got everything you would want when you look at him, but it's not translating in success or domination for Arizona defensively. They're not a dominant team defensively. He's not blocking a ton of shots, and which leads me to question about, you know, his desire and his want to. Ayton's got major issues. Doncic to me has major issues in that he's a European wing. How many great European wings really came through in this league? How many guys really made a huge difference and developed? Most of the guys you look from Europe were big guys. You know, even like Dirk, you know, the big men. Really made it successful. But I have major concerns about his athleticism and now how it's going to translate. So, and he's the only shooting. I looked up his stats. He's shooting like 32% from three. I mean, people act like he's a fantastic shooter. That's not good. That's not something I would write home about. Mo Bamba, everybody loves Mo Bamba. But he's shooting, again, below in the 60s from the free throw line. He has no offensive game outside of 8 feet. Even Bagley, no poor free throw shooting, can't hit the three. All that stuff is very, it brings up a number of questions for me about these guys. So I think the Bulls, when we look back 5 years from now, I think the best player on the team is going to be Lauri Markkanen, and he's going to be the best player that develops. And I'd like your opinion on what I'm about to say now. I went back and researched almost every NBA player, and his all the best shooters, and to a man, none of them had their career year in their rookie season shooting the three. And that's the one part of his game I've been disappointed in this year. He's at 35%. I think he's been very inconsistent from the 3-point line. So you have to expect, it would be common sense, that would get better. And I think that's the one aspect of his game that needs to improve. And I think that will improve. And thus, I think you're going to see, in the long run, Lauri Markkanen is going to be the best player out of all this draft pick this year, and the three that and the other two, you know, core pieces.
Yeah, sure, Lauri, maybe. I mean, it doesn't look like right now we're slotted for what, 8th and 16th as of today for picks in the draft. So it makes sense that Lauri will be better than the 8th and 16th picks. I mean, he was a 7th pick, so by default, it's a slightly better slot, and he's playing like the number 1 or 2 pick. So you'd have to really pull some magic to get a great pick out of one of these other picks that is better than Lauri. Now, who knows where we'll end up? Maybe we win the lottery and we get number one. Maybe we get a top 5 pick. Who knows if we tank? It's hard to say. Also difficult to see how much Chris Dunn improves and how much Zach LaVine improves. So, you know, those guys will be in the running for him. I will say, if Lauri is our best player, that the odds of us going past the second round are very low. Very low. I mean, we'll see. It's hard to judge so much on him as a rookie, but I don't look at him as a guy who really creates his own shot. And even though his three-point percentage is 35, and it certainly projects to get much better, it could clearly go up to like 40% without like a blink of an eye, right? Like, it wouldn't surprise you at all if that happened. But based on his college shooting, I almost kind of expect that. But he takes mostly open threes. He's not taking like difficult threes, off the dribble threes, contested threes, a whole lot. Like, he's taking mostly kick-out open threes, and so 40% is not so special on that. It's kind of like if Kirk Heinrich and Ben Gordon both shot like 39% from three for 1 year, you'd know which was a better shooter because Ben Gordon is shooting crazy off the dribble shots with two guys on him, like 5 feet behind the line, and Kirk Heinrich is shooting only wide open shots, you know. And yeah, so it's one of those things. He's going to also have to show that he can be a great shooter, you know, more like Nikola Mirotic was this year prior to the trade when he was playing really well. You know, he was really just like taking guys and just spacing up and then just shooting straight over them, you know, with guys in his face. You know, Markkanen's going to need to develop that to really become good, you know, to develop those Dirk-like moves to really become good. And that could happen. I'm not saying it couldn't, but it's pretty far away from where he is now. There's definitely a lot of skill development that still needs to go on there. And it's possible, but, you know, it's also more likely than not. I think people always overstate how much potential everyone has. The league is, like, littered with guys that people at one point said this is going to be a top 15 guy in a couple of years, and then it just never happens. And Markkanen now is, you know, guys showing great, great potential for his first year. Super excited about how well he's playing. Really pumped about it. But I'm just going to hold off a little bit on pronouncing him the next anything until we actually just see a little bit more growth.
Great. Next question. In an ideal situation, what position would you like to see the Bulls draft?
One.
No. He's referring to the guard, power forward, center. Like, what position do you think we're most in need of? I think that's what the gist of his question is. He puts center, power forward.
I like the answer of one better though. I guess it depends. Like, you got Lowry at power forward. You know, LaVine is probably a 2-3. I think you can play him either spot. And you got Dunn at point guard. So. Yeah, another wing is probably the most important piece, I think, left here. I don't know that I see Denzel Valentine really filling in that. If there was a really great center, that would also be a good fit relative to the guys on the team presently. But in the end, it doesn't matter. You draft the guy who is the best guy. Like, yeah. So if the Bulls, if your view didn't need a power forward and they drafted Markkanen, would you be happy that they drafted him? Or would you rather have had them draft a point guard who ended up being, like, lousy? You know, you would take the best guy. You take the best player. So especially when you're high up in the draft, you have to take the best player. You can't get stuck on what position guys play. You take the guy who can make an impact because he's really good, and then you trade someone if you need to, or you trade that guy if you need to. You build guys who are really good, and you get good talent on your team. That's far more important than anything positionally based. Free agency, when you're paying for players, is where you can kind of pick and choose positions based on your needs. Because everyone is sort of, you know, at a value cost. You know, it's like, okay, I have $5 million to spend. I can get a $5 million market value, you know, center, guard, whatever. You know, the draft is not like that. You take the guy who's the best guy because that guy can be radically better than the option at a position you need.
See, I disagree a little bit in that I think if where the Bulls are going to be picking, let's say 8 or 9, and let's say you have Sexton, who's a point guard at B+, and you have one of the bridges at a B. It's clear for this team, the Bulls would prefer, as a fit, one of the bridges. Because all you do is drop him in as a starter at the small forward position. He can guard any, both those guys can guard anyone and hopefully be these 3-and-D guys that they're so much in need. They might have it internally, you know, Sexton ranked a little bit overall better. But he's a point guard, and we have Chris Dunn. You know, so I do understand when you're picking 8 or 9. I know logic would say, or some people would argue, you take the best player available. Yeah, you know, Sexton might be a tad bit better, probably the better overall player in the long run. But for this team, I think one of the bridges would be a better fit. And that's what I would do.
I'll say this. If that's true, so if you're looking between two guys and 3 years out, one guy is just a slight bit better than the other, and the other guy's a better fit, it's fine. That's fine. But it's so rare that that's the case. Usually, when you're looking at these guys, the guy who's better is a lot better.
Yeah.
Like, there's huge gaps. Like, if you look at the draft and say you're picking number 20, there might be three guys who are available at 20, and maybe they're actually going to get picked at 28, 34, and 45. They might not get picked anywhere near 20, right? Mm-hmm. But there's, like, maybe three guys at 20 who are left who are, like, legit really good players. And if you grab one of them, it doesn't matter where you draft. And I think the same is true at, like, number 8. It's a little different, though. Because at number 8, maybe there's one guy in the draft left who's an all-star. And if you take him, you are immediately way better off than taking someone else. You know, and I agree. If it's just a matter of like, oh, if this guy is a PER of 16 and this other guy is a PER of 15.5, but the 15.5 guy is a much better fit, then yeah, of course. But Chris Dunn is like no superstar lock to be a major impact player for the foreseeable future for the Bulls. He's having a nice season. A lot of things I like about Chris Dunn. But he could easily end up like not being able to improve his scoring, stay inefficient, not be able to make the right type of gains. You might easily want a point guard who can shoot the three and can do other stuff.
Yeah, I can also see Dunn easily transitioning on the defensive side of the ball to the he can guard any shooting guard in the league. So I don't think it's much of a problem pairing him with, let's say, a Trae Young or Sexton, that some people might argue. But that's just my opinion, just because he's so good defensively, Dunn.
Defensively, yes. Offensively, do you want to get a shooting guard who can't shoot the three, though, and isn't going to have the ball in his hands all the time?
No, but if you can shoot as good as Trae Young can from offensively at the point guard position, then it kind of solves the issue, right? You know, I mean, I think those guys could basically, Young is technically a point guard who could basically play a shooting guard on the offensive end. Very similar to Ben Gordon and Kirk Heinrich work together.
Yes, I believe that fit could work.
Yes.
I'm just saying, Ben has to be the ball handler. Ben has to be the ball handler.
Agreed.
Or he has, like, no value on offense.
Agreed. And I think that's less so likely with Sexton. Next question that was from Steve Trudeau, by the way, that last question. I knew Steve Trudeau way back in the day, but this is from Tommy B. Assuming Fred is correct with his assertions that the Bulls will be a contender next year, did I actually officially say that? I think they're going to be better next year. I don't know if a contender might be a little strong. My contending year is 2020. But that said, what teams do you foresee in the East to give the Bulls the biggest problems going forward? Good question. Do you want to start out or do you want me to start out?
You start us off, Fred. I've used up all the mic time.
The Sixers are definitely, you know, it's hard not to be impressed with Embiid. I have major questions about how the team's constituted. This whole situation with Fultz is just a massive disaster. There's no way you can look at that and say that ended up well. And anybody who argues, oh, he was a consensus number one, that's not true. You can listen to their old podcast. I never understood the infatuation with this guy who was, I thought, a tweener. And, you know, proved out that myself and the basketball story and Tim Gallagher were right. I'm sure, I hope he comes back, but this is one of the worst situations I've ever seen. So that team is still sorely missing, in my opinion, shooters. They have J.J. Redick on a one-year contract, but I do have concerns about that team in the playoffs due to Simmons' inability to hit free throws. I always think that's a major issue, is if a guy, you know, like Simmons is such a detriment to your team down the stretch because he can't hit free throws. You're completely dependent on Embiid to win. And big picture here, the Sixers are playing better this year. They're going to probably be a playoff team, but they're still like 500. So here we are in year, you know, 5 or 6 of the process, and, you know, they're definitely better, and I'm sure they got moves to come, but I would probably say, though, in 2 or 3 years, assuming Embiid is still healthy, that will probably be our biggest threat. Raptors, you know, by that time, Lowry's getting older. You know, I would probably say 76ers are clearly going to be the team that's going to be, we're going to have to beat in 2 or 3 years.
Well, so much depends on health. You go 3 years out and you can never predict. Like, there's going to be star players who get hurt, right? And then they're just not teams. So, if you project based on where people are right now, I think the Boston Celtics clearly look like they would be the team. I mean, they've got a great amount of young, quality players on that team right now. They're in their prime. Kyrie Irving has plenty of time left. I don't know if he or Gordon Hayward is younger or older off the top of my head, but you know, neither of them are so old. I think that is a team that has really a good chance of being around for a long time, and it's hard to see which team is going to do better. That said, I'm not necessarily sold on Hayward. He's going to be coming back from a major injury. But they still have Jason Tatum. They've got some other good guys. It'll depend how they can manage their cap, though, after paying Hayward so much money and Irving so much money. Washington is the other team, I think, is sort of interesting, only because, you know, the big three of Wall, Beal, and Porter Jr. just seem like they should be able to do something. But they're really in a lousy cap scenario, and it's going to be difficult for them to add anything, so I think it'll be tough for them. I really do think the East is going to be wide open. I also go with the 76ers as a team that definitely has a lot of upside. I've not really looked at their cap situation so closely, so I'm not sure how much room they have and maneuverability they have, but they seem like they're probably in good shape. The only thing is, I don't at all believe Embiid is going to stay healthy. I mean, this is a guy who's not stayed healthy until this year. Like, he's been in the league, what, like 3 years now? And this is, or 4 years? I mean, and he's been healthy now for like three-fourths of a year, and all of a sudden we're not going to worry about that anymore.
I hope
for the guy that he is, but I think that's still a major, major risk for that team, and probably more likely than not. When you see guys who are that big and play that athletically, and they've got a bunch of like lower body injuries, that just does not bode well for their future. And I'd be surprised, honestly, if Embiid is able to put together three or four healthy years in a row. If I'm wrong, never want to see anyone get hurt, but I just wouldn't count on that.
Yeah, that's a great point about Embiid. I mean, he's still not even playing, I think, back-to-back games still. You know, that is going to be something, a shadow or albatross always hanging over them. I'm not as high on the Celtics just because I look at 2020 and I see Horford's going to be making $30 million and Hayward's going to be making $30 million. If they're going to re-sign Irving, he's going to be making $30 million. Is that enough to win the East? Probably, maybe, in 3 years. But the other guys on that team, well, who knows? You know, who knows how good you said Hayward's going to be? They're never going to beat Golden State, and I'm not as high on the other guys that a lot of people are. Tatum, Brown, I think Tatum's good, not great, and I think that's what he's going to be. I'm not high on Brown at all. The one guy in that team I do like, who I think we should go after somehow, some way, is Terry Rozier. I think he's a very underrated player. He's one guy I do like, but nobody else in that roster I'm really that high on. So I really do like the Bulls' chances, and I hate to say this, but Porzingis getting hurt, I thought the Knicks could have been positioned by adding another player. You know, Porzingis is so good to me, and just getting here is such a blow to that organization, to that team. But Porzingis to me was a guy who was really, you know, could have been a big threat in the long run. I think I said before that I thought the Knicks had the opportunity once they got outside of, you know, Noah's horrible contract. If they could have found somebody to pair with Porzingis, that could have been a really dangerous team in the next 3 or 4 years. Got one more.
Yeah, the Knicks' history of execution, though, so terrible. It's just so hard to imagine them not doing something stupid.
Yeah, well, I don't know. I think, yeah, you're probably right. I mean,
new management, so you never know. But it's hard exactly. to shed that reputation.
Exactly. Fred Hoiberg, the future. Just a generic question here. Fred Hoiberg, do you foresee him being the coach for his entire contract? I would say yes. I foresee him. I think he's done a good job this year. I think he's kind of redeemed himself. I think Fred Hoiberg is just like Doug Collins was. He's the A to B guy. The B to the championship guy is going to be a different coach. So, I think Fred's done a great job this year. I didn't think he did as bad as everyone said last year. He just, you know, had a situation where it was a vet run team and Jimmy Butler isn't going to listen to really anyone. I think he's done a good job this year, and we've seen improvement out of guys. That's one thing I never agreed with is Fred's first year with Doug McDermott in his second year and Nico in his second year, both those guys had massive improvements over their rookie seasons. So I think he's done a good job getting some guys better. I'd look at Dunn this year. I mean, that's a perfect example to see where he was last year and to see where he's this year. It's like night and day. But then you look at Felicio, or, you know, there's some other guys that he hasn't done as well of a job with. Overall, I think he's done a good job. I do see him finishing out his contract, but not being the guy taking us to the next level.
Clearly he's going to finish the contract, right? I mean, you look at what the Bulls have done each year of his contract. I can't say that they went under my expectations any given year. You know, this year they're actually playing much better than my expectations. And they finally got players who play into Hoiball style of basketball and could do the things he wanted to do. You know, his system all of a sudden is like working pretty well. So I think Hoiberg will probably be around. Do I think he's a great coach? Probably not. If he was a great coach, you know, he wouldn't have needed players that fit his exact system. He would have been able to change his system around to the players he had. But he's fine, and the Bulls aren't under any pressure to win this year. They're trying to lose. Next year, they will still be under minimal pressure, and then the year after that, his contract's done. So, I mean, it doesn't seem likely that they're going to, you know, make a move. There's just no reason to, right? Why would they just even want to spend the extra money? I think they'd rather give the guys that have some continuity, especially since they do seem to fit the style of play that he's coaching. You know, the players fit into that, so there's just no reason to move on. So I think he'll at least finish it out, and I would not be surprised if they extend him either, depending on how things go the next 2 years.
I would be surprised if they extended him. I mean, I guess it's possible, right? I guess you're going to have to. You don't want to have a coach going into a lame duck season. But I think he's going to be under pressure to make the playoffs next year. And I think he will, some pressure, I mean, to make the playoffs next year. And I think he'll definitely be under big pressure the following year. So,
and yeah, but you think we'll do that, right? I mean, you can't have it both ways. You can't be like, oh, this team is going to be great. They're going to make the playoffs next year. They're going to do really well. And then think, well, Herbert's probably going to be gone because they underachieve. I mean, one of those two things is going to be incorrect, right?
So oh, no, absolutely. I expect them to make the playoffs.
I think because of that, Hoiberg will have even more cachet and will have a good chance of being extended. They'll be like, oh, he made the playoffs with a bunch of young guys, and they're playing really great under him. I mean, you know, we'll see how it goes. But I would not at all be surprised. I do think you're right. Next year will be about a playoff push. I don't know if they need to make the playoffs for him to be extended or to play out the final year. But I do think that it is, you know, likely that there will be pressure. And certainly in his final year, if they didn't do it next year, there will be pressure to make the playoffs. If he missed 2 years, there's no way he's back.
No, agreed. And with that, that wraps up our first. That was a Tim Nazir. Thanks for the questions, everyone. And that wraps up the first mailbag episode. So let me roll down the window and throw the mailbag out on the side of the road as we pull real environmental.
Recycle that stuff, Brad. Recycle that.
Exactly. And as we pull into the driveway with the big red bus, another episode is wrapped up. Doug, gold as usual. Looking forward to next week. We actually have a game to talk about now that it's been a while. And all the best to you, brother. Have a fantastic week and go Bulls.
Go Bulls.
All right, my man. Talk to you soon, brother.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.